Back to another episode of the Midwest Monsters Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Grizzly Abner, and I'm joined by
Professor Wagstaff,
Venomous Vinny.
Good to be with you again, friends, as we do, you know, this format that we've been messing with for the last few years, and we're realizing this may be the last episode.
We might be out of gas.
We might be running out of content.
One could say we've come to a dead end.
Zing! So, that's right, folks, another installment of Dead End Sequels, where we find a sequel to a movie, and they only had one sequel instead of doing like a whole franchise. So in the past, we've done things like The Fly 2.
Chud 2.
Troll 2. Right? These things that just didn't get enough steam for a third film.
Yeah. And frequently, that translates to not the most robust conversation. But we're going to give it the old honest approach here on this episode.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Well, my name is Grizzly Abner, and I chose Alligator 2.
Professor Wagstaff here. I picked The Town That Dreaded Sundown from 2014.
Vinny here, and I chose Another Wolf Cop.
Another Wolf Cop. Now, Professor, did you do dates and details for everybody's movie?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to start with mine, Alligator 2. Hit them with it.
Alligator 2, The Mutation, released in 1991. And normally I wouldn't do this, but it kind of stood out to me, so I thought I'd mention it. It had a 3.9 on IMDb for its rating there, directed by John Hess. Starring Dee Wallace, Richard Lynch, Steve Railsback. Those are pretty much your notable names. I'll let you take it from there.
Okay, so I didn't know this film existed. I was on vacation in Madison, Indiana. We stopped by one of our favorite collectible slash movie slash video game stores. And right there in their used Blu-rays was, believe it or not, this has a Blu-ray release.
Wow.
Alligator 2. Was it Scream?
Yep. Shout Factory put it out.
Yeah. And I thought, whoa, that's weird. I said, well, I'm going to pick it up because I was under the impression that it was $5. But I got to the register and they said, that's $15. And I said, well, having not seen Alligator 2, I am not inclined to spend 15 of my hard-earned dollars on Alligator 2. You guys get that, right?
Sure.
Yes. Keeping it on brand.
Yeah. So we had this topic. I was looking over a list and I saw, Alligator 2, and it's streaming somewhere. Let's give it a go. And by golly, did we ever. We've covered the first film, so that's a reason why I chose it as well. We did a reptile episode,
we did one where it was like naturally occurring aquatic horror.
Yeah, and I think our cornerstone we chose Alligator, Lake Placid, and Rogue to be like the focus topics, and then grew out from that. And so watch the first Alligator movie. The first one's fun, right?
Oh, I love the first one.
Yeah, the first one's fun. This,
the first one's so much better than it should be.
Yes.
Like the way they shoot it and put it all together.
And it's a bit more of a serious movie.
Yeah.
So this is like your bonkers sequel to Alligator.
Yeah.
I went back and I watched Alligator because Joe Bob did it. And it's really funny to see the similarities but the glaring differences in the two movies. This is a sequel in spirit. It's not really following the same storyline of the first movie. Yeah. It's just in passing, someone says, what if it's a sewer alligator? It rejuvenates that thought from the first movie where tourists would go to Florida. They'd come home to New York or Chicago. The little alligator they bought as a baby gets too big. They flush it down the toilet while the kids are at school. And boom, you get your giant sewer alligator, which was a big urban legend in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
So this one is just slightly different. Yeah, so this is my first time watching it. Was this you guys' first time, I'm assuming?
Second time.
Really?
Yeah, I had liked the first one so much that I had looked for the second one.
Yeah.
Just because the first one really blew me away. Because I'd seen stills from that first movie where it comes like out at the reception. It's attacking people and it's ridiculous. And then you watch it, it's like, oh, this is actually... The whole movie's really pretty good. Which, fun fact... in Jackie Brown, the Tarantino movie, the character is written as if Max Cherry, played by Robert Forster, is reprising the role. So this is him, like, decades later. He's the former detective now, doing the bail bondsman. Yeah, Tarantino, because he loved Alligator, had said he wrote that role for him specifically.
That's awesome.
But the first one was so much fun that I sought out the second one. And not as enthused.
Be nice.
But did the honest approach and watched it a second time for the podcast here.
Okay.
This is the first time I've seen it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was excited to see Dee Wallace was in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? I think one interest... Now, let's just jump right in the story here. So we open with these guys who were dumping chemicals in the sewer. Mm-hmm. Right? And so this sets up our bigger storyline in that it's this idea of a crooked business owner and a crooked mayor working together. We're in Miami, aren't we? We're somewhere in Florida. So these guys are working together. So we find these guys dumping these chemicals in the sewer. It's their way to get rid of them. And that's essentially our setup for the movie. There's a lot of fun stuff going on here. You see these guys out gigging for frogs and one of them gets eaten by an alligator and later that's going to be this floating leg that appears that alerts all the locals. But again, we're following the story of this one main detective, right? Who goes by the name of Solo Lobo, which is, he's the lone wolf, right? But he's known for taking care of the Hispanic population. Right, and that he looks out for them.
And what do I know him from?
Professor?
Big Daddy?
What was he in Big Daddy?
He's the dad that Adam Sandler keeps phoning in, checking with. He's got shorter hair.
Okay.
But he's the one that ends up coming to court and test and speaking on his behalf. He's like, he's an idiot.
I feel like I've seen him everywhere. But I couldn't remember from what.
He's one of those guys that just looks like an amalgamation of a few different guys. Yeah. So we build up this storyline with this detective who's a dad, who's married to Dee Wallace. He's a little too involved in his detective work. They're, you know, I could go beat for beat, but it's really not worth going beat for beat on Alligator 2, I don't think.
Did you guys find that when she did the video for his birthday with their kid for him to watch, because he works a different shift than she does, and, there's a little too much sexual innuendo with the kid still in the frame for me.
Yeah.
What about how he's late for his birthday dinner and she burns the dog shit out of his steak? That was great. Yeah, so it gets brought up. So they find this floating leg and people are like, oh, it could be out sewer alligators. You know, like, hey, that's a nod back to the first one. Yeah. They're also running some of their crooked business out of a professional wrestling circuit.
Pro wrestling.
90s.
Chavo Guerrero Sr. shows up in the film, which is pretty impressive. So they finally get to test the DNA from this bite that they've got on this leg, and there are DNA irregularities. Perhaps it's because the guys are dumping chemicals in the sewer.
Oh, no.
Trying to build this up here, guys. Anything to say to this point?
I wish Swamp Thing was in it.
That's fair. That's fair.
I think you're doing a fantastic job.
It's really hard. Then they hire this gang of professional gator hunters to come in and hunt down this big old gator. And one of those gator hunters is who?
Kane Hodder.
Kane Hodder.
Did you find it interesting that the other gator hunter had burn scars? Like real burn scars?
Huh.
The blonde? No. I can't remember the actor's name now.
Dolph Lundgren.
Richard Lunch? The main one?
Yeah.
Which is really weird watching him be more of the country aspect.
But I thought it was interesting that
wow.
another actor with burn scars was in that crew.
Yeah, that is interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
No. Something for you to sit on tonight.
Well, you're the one who does the deep thinking on
sit
the show.
Sit on a bucket.
So, the cop tries to dynamite the alligator. That doesn't kill it. There's a great scene where they're all climbing this iron ladder, and the gator tears down that iron ladder and eats all the redneck gator hunters, which was a lot of fun. So then they come up with a more coordinated hunt to capture this gator. And then my favorite trope of any horror franchise is when we get to go to the carnival.
And always.
We get to go to the carnival with the alligator. Always.
And so, it only took a sequel. One sequel and we're at the carnival.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't made it to space yet, but
Not yet.
I heard there's a script out there.
Alligator 3 in space. I'm there.
Maybe we don't have a dead end sequel after all.
Maybe not. Maybe not. So we go to the carnival. The mayor gets shot. The gator's running amok. And then we get this great final scene with a gator explosion.
It is bitching.
It's. Hey, listen. For a movie called Alligator 2.
The Mutation.
I think it's pretty fun.
It is.
I think it's better than a 3.9. I think I gave it a 5 or a 6.
Yeah, I'd go 4.1.
For what it... if you read that title and you watch this movie, you're getting better than what you should.
Listen, this is exactly what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
There is no curveball here, especially for this era, 91, rental era. And I even jotted this down. There is so much of the criteria that applies to so many other movies, which is you've got a sequel being cashed in from an IP within the last decade, 15 years. So many of those were brought back in this era. But you're also filming in downtown L.A., late 80s, early 90s. You got, half or more of your cast are recognizable names. Like keyboard score, it's all there. It's the franchise cash in. So it's like, this feels like 100 other movies you've watched. If you've explored other properties with the cash in grabs, this feels like one of those, which is fine. It's certainly entertaining. And with this, you get an alligator, you get some cameos of people you recognize. D. Wallace, there's way worse ways to spend 90 minutes.
I agree.
Okay.
I'm not going to dunk on the movie. It's fine. It's what it looks like.
What disappointed me was when we're at the police station, not a single punk rocker.
Yeah.
Are they even doing their job?
Yeah. Like, you're really going to film a scene and not have a punk rocker?
I will say, though, the first one really reaches far beyond what it should be. The first one is a real accomplishment.
Yes.
It's an entertaining movie that's much more effective than it should be on paper. But, the sequel's fine. Especially for this topic, dead-end sequels, we've covered some turds. Like, this is by no means the worst.
Sure. And I'll tell you, so the first one's more serious, and it's better storytelling. This, as you said, this is as far as a plot device for an 80s sequel, this is a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you also where it pales in comparison to the first one are just wide shots of the alligator.
Yes.
Because they essentially just use an alligator and some, like, models around the alligator.
The first one really goes out of its way to take some chances in it. And they pull it off.
Yeah, you get some broad daylight shots of a giant alligator on the streets of New York. The first one's at? Yeah. So that's where, this one you don't get as much fun with special effects as you do the first one. But as you said, the gator explosion, is bitching.
I think they still do an okay job with the miniatures, sets, and things to make that gator they've got look bigger.
Yeah, when you really rewind back to the early 90s and you think of all of the garbage we have watched from that period.
Yeah.
Like, this at least tries to respect the viewer.
Yeah. Like, yes, absolutely. And that is what won me over in that. I love a bonkers sequel, so this checks a lot of those marks for me. So I had a lot of fun with it, but what made me at least give it some respect is that they respected the audience.
Sure.
So
the interesting thing, though, is I think the cast is really checked out. Like, Dee Wallace is usually way more dialed in to her performances. Steve Rail's back. Like, these people are usually really invested in what they're putting on screen. And in here, I feel like they're just getting through until it's, you know, shooting's done.
Yeah.
Which is fine. They're not bad in it, but you can tell it's just kind of phoned in. But that'll happen with dead-end sequels.
Dead-end sequels. All right. Any other thoughts here?
No. It's not one I would go out of my way to recommend, but if you like the first one, if you want some more alligator fun,
throw it on. If you just want... It's a light, fun watch. I mean...
We have covered Children of the Corn sequels. We have covered Hellraiser sequels. Throw it on. Throw this on.
Yeah.
As you said, there's worse ways to spend 90 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Alligator 2, The Mutation. All right. I believe we are rolling into the venomous ones.
Yeah. Another wolf cop.
Another wolf cop.
Professore?
Released in 2017, also directed and written by Lowell Dean, like the first one. It's the same core cast as the original. There you go.
So you have Officer Lou Guru, a.k.a. the Wolf Cop. His old partner is now the chief of police and knows about his... issue of being a werewolf and just asks that he lock himself up on nights that have a full moon.
He's got his own kennel.
Yeah.
That he can sleep in.
This movie opens up with a RoboCop style police chase of like a van full of bad guys with the wolf cop and his souped up cop car chasing after him. Like, guys... Let's say you've never seen Wolf Cop and you don't know the title of this movie and you're just going in entirely blind. These first few minutes are going to tell you everything you need to know about what you're about to watch for the other next hour or so. Okay. So he's an urban legend, basically. Other cops and people in the town report this wolf cop, but the chief of police says, it's just an urban legend, you know, it's not real, blah, 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 blah. So you have the new local savior to the town. What's the character's name? He's opened a brewery.
Oh, yeah. And an arena for their hockey team.
And an arena. He's brought a hockey team to their place.
Dark Star
Businessman brewery. Sylvester Shallows. And I believe his beer is called Chicken Milk. Is that right?
Yes, because they keep making, like, grab a cold cock jokes.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. And then, have you guys seen this movie before this viewing?
This was my second go-round.
I had not seen it.
Yeah.
Had you seen it, Professor?
This is my first viewing. And the whole time through it, I kept thinking, I can't believe Vinny picked this. This just is like the most anti-Vinny
movie. So I had enough fun with the first one, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah.
So I picked this one, and I'm it's starting out. I'm like, all right, more Wolf Cop, baby. And then I say, God damn it, Kevin Smith.
Oh, man, I knew it. I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear Vinny go on about... Now, for our listeners, right, and for the sake of we've got time to spare, because we're not going to fill an hour on this one, Can you please just give them a quick rundown of your history with Kevin Smith from Love to Hate?
Yes.
How similar.
I was a teenager, early 20s, at the height of Kevin Smith. I'm talking Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy. And I was an enormous fan. Enormous. I bought the Jay and Silent Bob comic books. I had the Jay and Silent Bob fucking action figures that they sold at comic shops. Like, I was all about Jay and Silent Bob and the Viewisk universe, if you will. Years go by. I met Kevin Smith once at Wizard World. He was riding high at Wizard World Chicago. Him and Walt Flanagan were there. Kevin was enjoying his seat in the throne as King Nerd. And he was totally accessible, extremely nice, like when I met him. But as the years go by, I start to like his work less. And the reason I start to like his work less is because it starts to become more about Kevin Smith on camera than Kevin Smith writing and directing a movie. Kevin Smith and Jay and Silent Bob were a moneymaker. They were very popular. Give the people what they want, I guess, is the mindset. But when your character is called Silent Bob, and each and every movie you get more and more of the dialogue, you aren't Silent Bob anymore. And it starts to become a little too self-gratifying for me and annoying. You've got An Evening with Kevin Smith, which I enjoyed watching. That's also when I start to realize, boy, Kevin Smith sure likes to talk about Kevin Smith.
It was part two for me.
Yep.
That's when the flip started to happen with me. I was like, oh, this is different.
Yes.
Isn't there a cringy interaction with a little person in part two?
I think it's in part two, yeah.
Where you're like, didn't like the way that went down.
Yeah.
And more and more of his... And I watched Clerks 3 recently and it was fine.
Still haven't watched it.
It was fine. I was not a fan of the Jay and Silent Bob movie, the most recent one that came out, where... Only Kevin Smith would have the audacity to play himself in a movie where he is already playing one of the titular characters.
Yeah.
It gets to be just a bit much. And look, I'm happy for Kevin Smith that he has achieved his dream that he had, that he made his living doing what he enjoyed. I'm glad for Kevin Smith that there is a section of his audience that is still there to support these ventures. I am not one of them.
Yeah.
I still greatly enjoy those earlier
works. Oh, yeah, the early movies, you'll never take those away.
I still have a Dogma poster in my living room right now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But there just comes a point where I always liken it to Steve Martin. Steve Martin aged with his audience through his career.
Yes, and it's always continued to.
And Kevin Smith did not
age
with his audience. He stayed...
I think that's a very important detail.
He stayed exact... And hey, whatever, you stayed exactly who you are, but that...
Yeah, you do what you want, and a lot of young fans are going to get older and go, I'm just going to like those old movies.
And in his own words, you know, he always thanks God that he made a career out of dick and fart jokes.
Yeah.
But some of us aged out of dick and fart jokes to carry a movie.
Right, right,
and if
right.
You're still, yeah. If that's still the cornerstone of your films, that's great.
Yeah.
For you.
So
it's just not going to work for all of us.
Yours is more polarizing than me. I mean, you met the guy and were really way more involved, it sounds like, early on. But I loved Kevin Smith in those first handful of movies. And then at some point, I just go, okay, I think I'm good now. But what's funny is I actually texted Vinny when I was watching this movie, and I said, have you watched this one yet? And he hadn't, so I just left it alone.
Just let it then go.
Talked to him within the week, and he said, now I know exactly why you texted.
Goddamn Kevin Smith.
It's like when I told him he needed to watch Chillerama because there was a teenage werebear. skit, but I didn't tell him
what that meant. Yeah. So I see Kevin Smith in this movie. I'm like, God damn it.
Now, I am not as Kevin Smith averse as both of you, but I also still don't run out to check out his new stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I still haven't seen Clerks 3.
Let's be honest. We're probably all closer somewhere in the middle than the details are leading to. Yeah. Like, we love the early movies and don't really keep up.
And listen, I got to meet him. It was super rare because he doesn't do a whole lot of meet and greets anymore or photo ops. I got to do a photo op with him in Louisville, I want to say in 2015. And he was coming to do a screening for something at the time, maybe Yoga Hosers. But he made a special deal to do photo ops for $50. All the proceeds went to the Shriner Burn Hospital in Louisville. And it's like, he's still a good dude.
I don't think he's a bad dude.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, at
so
all.
So I don't want the audience to think that like we're dunking on him for like being a... No, it's just
back and forth. There was also, I think it was Sundance, where he caused a whole huge hubbub about Red State. And then he got all of the investors in there and literally pulled them away from all these other films that were trying to land.
Yeah.
And he said, psych, I'm not doing it with any of you. Wasted everybody's time, screwed all these other filmmakers. And I think that's when it started to change the tone with a lot of people who are interested in these movies. They're like, that's not cool, man.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you're doing, you're it's kind of affecting the wrong people. Like, I respect the spirit.
Right.
It's just kind of channeled in the wrong direction.
And you can't find that movie anywhere now.
Interesting.
Yeah. You can't find Red State anywhere.
Isn't Dogma super hard to get a hold of now? Wasn't that
the
a Weinstein
Blu-ray
movie?
Definitely is.
Maybe, yeah.
The Blu-ray's outrageously.
So
rare.
I got that one.
Me too. I got it back when it was just normal to get, and now people pay obscene amounts for it.
So Kevin Smith's what, the mayor of the town, or he's running to be mayor or whatever? And his dialogue appears to be written by Kevin Smith. Yeah. So here you have your adversaries. You have Kevin Smith is this peckerhead mayor. Then you've got this guy who's got the cold cock. Then Lou Guru's buddy shows back up after they thought he had been abducted by aliens.
Yep, you're on track.
And he starts to grow another being out of his body.
A la Quato, but doesn't look as good as Quato.
Yep. A Lou Guru meets, is it Willie? Is that his friend's name? Meets his sister, because she like deals with
a little bit of the mystical
arts, if you will. And then it turns out that she is some sort of werecat. Where they then have full makeup werewolf werecat sex for a really long sex scene.
That's when my wife tapped out.
She got that woman has six titties lined up her stomach like an animal.
It's weird they said view askew on them.
And you get full on werecat cunnilingus.
Yep.
This ranks, summary-wise, up there with me covering The Beyond, the Italian Fulci classic, and Todd on Plan 9.
I don't remember the first Wolf Cop being quite this bonkers. It was bonkers.
It was fun.
You had his red rocket wiener and all that kind of thing, but this one feels like it goes way more gutter than the one before.
And I mean,
that's what I'm saying. This couldn't be a less Vinny movie.
Yeah.
We get Wolf Wiener in like the first 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wastes no time.
He hangs Wolf Dong very early in this movie.
Yeah.
So, guys, I'm not going to spend a lot of time going beat for beat on this.
You sure?
Yeah. He ends up, because he gets fucked up pretty bad because they send like a robot Frankenstein after him. And the mystical cat lady gives him crushed up piece of the moon that was brought back by one of the Apollo missions that he snorts like cocaine, and it makes him heal faster. And also one of the gimmicks with him being the wolf cop is booze fuels his being a wolf cop.
Yeah, he's a raging alcoholic.
So the movie then culminates with him being in the arena. They don't, and under the arena is like some evil lair where like they're hatching a plan to.
Because they're putting this chemical in the chicken milk beer that they're going to use to give everybody this symbiotic being like his
friend like his has. Friend had, yeah.
And it becomes a belly burster where they burst out and become their own independent.
Bad Milo vibes.
Yeah. But even more poorly done.
So then the Wolf Cop is facing off against a hockey team of evil henchmen. And he's fighting them and doing rails of moon dust and getting drunk. Werecat lady helps him out.
I honestly am enjoying watching you summarize this more than I did the movie.
Yeah, I'm liking this better than the movie.
And you're doing fine. It's not a knock.
Also, shout out to the McRib for giving me this movie because they had a spare copy. And my wife being bewildered.
Wait, spare? Did he have more than one of these?
Yeah.
He owns multiples of
stuff. Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we love him.
That's his gimmick.
Yep. Two copies, huh?
Yeah. And my wife was like, why do you have another Wolf Cop on DVD or Blu-ray, but you don't own Wolf Cop? I said, I don't know. Someone gave it to me. The McRib gave it to me. Shout out to the McRib.
Yep. So here comes a Wolf Cop right now.
There's another Puka Cop.
So yeah, guys, I'm done talking about it. There's no reason to tell you what the end was. Or anything sure? like that. No, I've told you everything you need to know. I don't want. Yeah, I sight unseen picked this movie, guys, because I like the first one.
Yeah,
I knew that within 10 minutes. I was like, "Oh, Vinny hadn't watched this when he picked it."
Nah,
that which is a compliment to you.
There's still some decent werewolf like transformation.
That's a great transformation.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So you guys wouldn't mind a sequel.
I really like in the big hockey arena scene that, you know, the old trope of when you get in a fight, you pull the guy's jersey over his head. He goes to do that and he rips the guy's skin up over his head. That was a great effect. I also like that they had, for any of you who are fans of Slapshot, which is a great hockey movie, the brothers who were the goons in that were the Hansen brothers. This has the Hansen sisters in it, which is...
I have not picked up on that.
Which is a fun nod. Good stuff. Yeah. That's essentially where the fun ends, but boy, it's something. It is something.
This movie's terrible. The first one didn't have enough to be a full movie, but it's okay because I like it. But even by the end of the first Wolf Cop, you're like, we've done it.
We did what we came to do.
So. And I think that's quite apparent in this. This somehow finds a way to ratchet up everything and be dull. Mm-hmm. They bring in all of these other characters. We spend all this time on more people than Wolf Cop, which is why everybody's watching the movie. It's just a mess. I mean, don't get me wrong, maybe with some of the humor, if the humor lands more with other viewers, they may enjoy this movie more as a balanced approach. Oh, there's
definitely a crowd for this.
But they
probably listen to ICP.
Yeah, I was going to say, Vinny has just alienated so many people, and I am so proud of him for it.
Hey, we don't call him venomous for no reason.
Yeah. Sorry, Juggalos, but...
Whoop, whoop.
But yeah, the humor is just... It really gets gutter with a lot of this movie.
Really gutter.
The one thing I will give this movie is that it looks good. It's got a good aesthetic to it. I feel like they maintained that and kind of that same vibe with the town. So, I mean, you get more of what you liked in that regard. But, and this is frequent with this topic of dead-end sequels, completely unnecessary.
Oh, yeah.
The first movie is enough. There is nothing you watch this and go, we needed parts of this.
Well, I think... Also, the success of the first Wolf Cop movie, granted it was a better movie, but I think it also speaks to the drought that you were having with horror movies at that time. Original things, original works. The first one had an 80s feel, and I mean that in the fact that it was fun, like a lot of some of that 80s stuff was. Same thing with Terrifier. and the success it enjoyed. It just speaks to what was really coming out at the time. And they saw that success, and so they said, hey, we're going to crowdfund a second one. And they just didn't, it didn't have the legs for a second one.
It's a long 80 minutes.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And I don't feel bad dunking on it because Vinny had never seen it, doesn't really have any investment in it.
No.
I mean, it fits perfectly into the mold of the of what this episode is, which is why it's a tough topic. It's fun with the Dead End sequel, but you frequently run into these. There's well,
that's,
a reason.
That's why this is only the third or fourth time we've done it.
Yeah, yeah. We do it like once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will give it credit for ripping off the movie Cobra. For the cover,
oh, yeah.
The mm-hmm. Stallone movie, oh, yeah. Cobra. That's great cover art. Yep, that's it. That's another Wolf Cop.
I also found when I was looking for it on streaming, some of the places don't even list it as another Wolf Cop. It's Wolf Cop 2.
I know someone who would be very proud of that title.
Yeah, that's true.
So true. Shout out, Toddy.
So, yeah, there we go.
Another Wolf Cop.
Would we recommend this to anybody?
Yeah, in good conscience.
I mean, you can.
Kevin Smith fans? Wolf
no,
Cop fans?
No, this isn't even for Kevin Smith fans. Unless you just get a boner to see him in anything, make an appearance. There, I mean, this is... No, I don't think so.
Werewolf oral sex fans?
Yes. Okay. This is for them.
Yeah, it's definitely a niche audience here.
Okay, another Wolf Cop. All right, Professor. Bring us home, buddy.
On to my choice. The Town That Dreaded Sundown, released in 2014, starring Addison Timlin, Veronica Cartwright, Anthony Anderson, Gary Cole, Edward Herman, Ed Lauder, Dennis O'Hare. Before we jump into the plot, had you guys seen this before?
No.
Yep.
Had you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I'd seen the original.
Yeah, and my experience, I'll be honest, when this came out was, I wasn't interested. I was like, why are we remaking this? Then I learned that it was leaning into exploiting the local scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, get that argument out of the way first about this.
Yeah, and that's why I want to address this first before we can jump in. I was like, ooh, gross. Then I learned in reality that it happens. Then I backed up a step and went, wait a minute. This isn't the movie fictionalizing that. They actually do that there. Texarkana. They actually screen the movie.
Yeah, every year.
Now, I don't know about at the park. I think that may be an embellishment.
Yeah, I don't know.
In the movie, in the beginning there, they've got a drive-in. But I've heard that they play it in the park. And in the park is where some of the real-life victims were murdered. So it was an interesting relationship for me with that because initially I was kind of ignorant to the subject. I just assumed that this was in bad faith.
Yeah.
And then kind of learned it's like, no. Not really. It's kind of just a spinoff on reality.
Yeah.
And so I picked this movie because I thought it was an interesting exploration for a topic that's not the easiest to pick movies for with Dead End sequels, whereas this isn't directly a sequel, but it isn't directly a remake either. It's within the universe of the first film existing in reality.
It's a requel.
Yeah, it's like all of these things that's just a little bit different.
It's real.
But it still fits within the same property, so I thought it'd be kind of a nice break from the usual doldrums of that. Initial thoughts on it?
I was skeptical. Well, you had kind of laid it out and said, well, I wouldn't necessarily, it's not really a sequel, but then again, it's not a remake either. And I, after watching it, I totally agree with that. I would put it in the category of sequel because it relies so much on that first movie.
Yeah.
I do think that you are correct in your choice of it. I had seen the original movie before, being a big fan of The Legend of Boggy Creek. Charles B. Pierce making this one as well.
Regional glory.
Yes, and it has... Town of Dreaded Sundown, the original, has that flavor that Boggy Creek has because you've got that narration by Charles B. Pierce. There's a little more of movie to that. Whereas Boggy Creek very much makes you feel like a documentary and reenactments and documentaries. This one feels a little more like a movie with some narration over top of it. But I don't even know. I think I just assumed this was a remake. And I'm not crazy about The Town That Dreaded Sundown. Like, it's fine, but it's not something that I rewatch. So it was something I had never watched, and I honestly probably never would have if you hadn't have picked it. But having watched it, I'm not mad that I watched it.
Yeah.
But I've got some issues with it we'll get into.
Cool. Yeah, for me initially, I had been put off by it, but then had heard kind of differing opinions secondhand, and had kind of internally made a note, like, maybe I should watch that at some point. Maybe I just didn't know what the hell I was talking about.
So is this your first?
Yeah, this was my first time all the way through on it. So yeah. I'd watched a little bit of it on Netflix, I think, years back, and went, ugh, they're screening the movie where some close to the murders happened. This just, no thanks. And so I'm willing to admit, I was premature on that. I really didn't know. I didn't fully understand what the point of the movie was. And so I backed out a little too early. But for me, in my experience, this was a film that my father had seen decades ago, and then it had popped up on TV and he taped it and was so thrilled because it was a pretty scary movie back then. And
oh yeah,
and really different in the sense of that documentary approach that had kind of branched out and reached more and more people in this really novel presentation. And so when he found it on TV, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so in our house, it was this creepy thing based on a real case. And so it was all, I don't want to make it out to be like some sacred film, but it meant something to us. And so when this movie appeared to be this Blumhouse remake,
yeah.
And so I'm glad we watched it though, because I flat out didn't know what I was talking about, as movie fans often are guilty of.
Sure. It was on Netflix, which it just appeared out of nowhere. Like it had no hype around it. Like no one was talking about it. And I thought, what the hell? I'll give it a shot. You know, this was like 6-7 years ago, and I was blown away.
Yeah,
but the first time, and it holds up the second time around. I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, it's much better than you think it's gonna
be. The beginning had like it's got a great beginning to that movie. Yeah, I was like, okay, fucking hey, I'll sit through the rest of this. You got my attention.
It does a great job of retelling, you know, what happens in the first film, mm-hmm. and talking about that. So yeah, I really liked the movie.
Cool. So the movie opens really strong, as we're referencing here. Just to kind of clarify what we mean by that is it lays out the case history. So you get some of the stuff on the real crimes, the Moonlight murders that happened in Texarkana.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, the original is based on true stories.
Yeah, and there were these serial murders that happened in Texarkana, which the interesting element of it is that it had two jurisdictions between the states there, with this community that basically overlapped at the state line. And so you would have murders at these different places, rumors of the killer having a bag over his head. For your common horror fan, you're going to recognize that from Friday Part 2.
Yeah.
With Jason popping through on there. But in this, they lay out the case history. Then they reference the movie from the 70s. So we're already taken kind of in this meta angle from the side that, hey, we're recognizing the movie exists within the world of this one. This isn't a direct sequel to it. We're in quote-unquote reality with this movie that existed in the past. And then we also reference the local annual tradition of playing this around Halloween time at the drive-in, which is where we then go into a couple at the drive-in there. Watching the movie, the girl is not into the subject matter, just really cliche stuff, but perfect for an opening of a movie. They bounce out to a lover's lane kind of setting where we have them attacked by a present day attacker who looks just like the one that we've just documented in the real life case in the movie. We have the guy, Corey, who is murdered, and Jamie, who flees and survives. And they've got that really pretty well done interaction with the drive-in theater, mm-hmm. and her kind of getting out of there. Weeks later, the bloodshed continues. Near Thanksgiving, we have a couple killed in a motel. We also have the words uttered, "This is for Mary, make them remember."
Yeah.
And that is also called to Jamie on the phone afterwards of the other attack there. You then kind of lean into the classic town reaction where you got people, you know, boarding up their homes. We've got the town hall meeting. This is also where we really get to know a really good cast. Mm-hmm. We've got Ed Herman playing the local pastor who had also been at the drive-in theater at the beginning, putting the flyers on the cars with his little table set up with his crew.
Trying to convince people to not watch the movie because it's just...
And in fairness to him, a lot of times you get these zealot characters in the movies that are a little extreme. But with this, it's like, no, he's got a point. These are real people.
These are real people that died. Their families are still around.
Anthony Anderson, who we know from a lot of comedies.
Yeah. Who I did not expect to see show up in this.
No. No. And to do a great job in a role that
pretty good actor
normally doesn't play.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you got him, Gary Cole, who you know most...
From Different Strokes.
Yeah. You just broke me. Gary Cole, he would recognize as Lundberg from Office Space especially, and Talladega Nights. As
Reese Bobby.
Yes. And then Ed Lauder, rest in peace.
You know, I didn't realize that he was Lundberg. You just blew my mind.
I'm happy to be of service. So you got those guys within the sheriff's office. Veronica Cartwright also plays Jamie's grandma, who plays a role throughout the film. And you kind of have all of them condensed together with the quick kind of introductions without spelling it out for the audience. So you get this really pretty robust cast in the setting of the town hall meeting. And then we've kind of laid out the film. We've got the serial killer here. We branch out into the typical law enforcement tropes. They've got their meetings where they're planning how to approach this. Meanwhile, Jamie, who's survived that initial attack, is starting to... research the case and understand why the killer is stating, you know, the remembrance and the point of what they're doing. You then jump into the couple after the town dance. We've got the town dance there. And the two guys that go out, we've switched it up. It's a little bit more modern approach to that. But we still get back to the trombone attack. This has been an opinion... that is varied very differently between me and my father. I think in the original film, it's comical and a mistake. Because the original murders, I think they were, I may be wrong, a saxophone player, a trombone player.
Like a French horn, maybe?
Yeah, French horn. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think it's French horn.
But it was a town hall dance, so they've got that mirrored up here. But this person was killed... They had their suitcase with him with their instrument, but they weren't killed with the instrument. And in the movie, he's putting the knife on the trombone. And it's pretty goofy.
It is goofy, but I did revisit the first film to watch this. And
it's still creepy, but it's goofy.
Yes, it's goofy, but I think the way it sells in the little bit that it does, because it doesn't sell big, is just the intensity in his eyes while he's stabbing them with the trombone.
Sure.
Like, and so I was like, okay, it is stupid, but I don't like it.
Yeah, the scene's not completely failed, but it doesn't fall in line.
I think it works better with this movie than it does the first one, because at least they're...
This is more fictional.
Well, and I think with this one, at least they're trying to reenact. Like, the killer is copycatting. So at least it works better in that context than it does in the original
movie. And so then, and that's a good point too, because... This is where the viewer starts to realize if they're pretty well versed with the original movie or the case, they're like, okay, we're really leaning into what originally occurred with what we're doing now. After that, you get the town candlelight vigil with a shooting, which is actually a suicidal teenager dressed as the Phantom, which is a really kind of bizarre curveball that they throw in there.
Yeah,
bizarre is the word.
But you've also got, what's his name, Nick, who is helping Jamie while she's researching this situation, who's also creating that kind of cliche relationship that's blossoming out of that. And then you start to get the kind of the red herrings approach, especially with the talk that's happening with the pastor. They sit down with him in the pews about an email that had come through to Jamie as the Phantom tied to him, and it's kind of leaning into what you'd expect, but then we get to, on Christmas Eve, Deputy Tillman, Gary Cole, Lundberg.
Which time about Willis?
Yes, killed through the window, which is also like the original case. Don Wells in the original movie has that pretty impressive sequence with her there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get his eye It's pretty gnarly.
While he's receiving what, Vinny?
A sakau.
Always counting on you for that. Yeah.
And then we really start to lean into the weird, where we've got the son of Charles B. Pierce, who is still alive in the area.
Isn't that feller from American Horror Story?
Yes. Okay. Dennis O'Hare. And this is where Jamie and Nick visit him, and we learn of a sixth original victim, Hank McCready, that never got the props, you know, the sympathy that was deserved for that, and that the son of Pierce believes that this is who the killer is, that it's tied to this victim who wasn't given the respect that they deserved and the coverage for it. Then basically, we'll speed this up here. Jamie and her grandma plan to move west for her college. She's getting out of town. We're entering the last, you know, the third act of this movie. We have Jamie and Nick hook up because, for I guess the younger viewers, we needed to see that through. So check that box. But we get Nick, who is killed. And I'd like to point out, with the outdoor lights sequence before that happens, that is 4 years before the Halloween entry, where Blumhouse taps right back into that gimmick with the lights flashing, which, you know, is really good in the Halloween movie as well. But on the way out of town, Jamie and Lily and her grandmother stop at a gas station on the way out, and the grandma is killed. Veronica Cartwright is gurgling, bleeding out there at the car side, and Jamie flees into the woods. And at that point in the woods, Jamie is shot by arrows and the killers arrive. They are a deputy who had been protecting her through the movie, who is McCready's grandson, as referenced. And then Corey, the boyfriend from the beginning of the movie, because we needed an extra twist to make it.
Teddy, the pizza delivery guy from the beginning of the movie.
I hate this.
Yeah, I
abhor this. This ruins a lot of the movie for me.
Wow.
This is fucking dumb. It's dumb. It's, like you say, twist on top of twist. It doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, it just... I was so disappointed when they went this route.
They went too far. The movie was fine.
Yes.
Yeah. You could have just made it McCready's grandson, a sixth victim, and been done with it. Yes. We didn't need the boy from the beginning.
Not at all. And then, that's why, in the beginning, he told you to look away.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah, they.
So we had a whole funeral and everything, and this right. guy just faked his death. Okay. Yeah.
So they both want notoriety. Foster shoots Corey to frame them, but then Jamie shoots Foster. The body is never found. And we leave, you know, an open-ended there. The crux of this movie, the enjoyment of it, is the recreation.
Yeah.
Bringing it back to the small town. That's what matters. So don't let the shitty ending, if you haven't seen this,
we literally
haven't spoiled it. The point of the movie is the journey. If you really want more to add on to the original movie you enjoy, this is a worthwhile watch. But the ending, they tried way too hard.
Pretty weak.
Yeah.
Pretty weak. Great job covering that.
Thanks.
Because there's a lot of lots of ins, lots of outs, as we say. Just a couple other high spots I want to put out there. Some scenes that I thought were effective. I think the movie's smart until the end.
Mm-hmm.
Smarter than you would think.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's violent.
Yes.
That's another thing.
And the killer's intimidating.
Yes, absolutely. And I also like how it blurs time. Like, this is one that is based in modern day, but yet... A lot of shots could fool you into thinking you're back in time in the first
movie. That's true. It's a good point.
And I think that's something that the movie does really well.
It's like the TV show Bates Motel.
Yes.
Where they completely avoided things that could time stamp it.
Yep.
Which helps it.
Absolutely. Just some scenes that I thought were really effective. I really enjoyed that creepy, at the very beginning of the movie, there's a Jim Bowie statue in town because of Texas. And someone has put a mask on it.
Yeah.
Put a sign on that says, remember, the decapitated head through the hotel window was super gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she jumps out of the window and breaks her leg, it's insane. I mean, like, it's shot so well. The effects are done well. Yeah. That sign junkyard where the gay couple gets killed. with the trombone. I mean, that's really pretty cool to see all the big old signs in
there.
Cool
setting, especially with them parking the car and facing the pastor. Yeah. As they're settling in.
It also led me to believe somebody who's writing this movie has a little bit of a thing for psychos. Twice in one movie?
Hey, you like what you like.
Well, fair enough.
Who can blame them? So, yeah, those were just a couple things I wanted to add. But, yeah, aside from a poorly executed ending.
Man, the rest so disappointing.
It, yeah.
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 It's one of those where you're like, you've enjoyed the journey there, and then you get to the end. It's like, this is what I sat through for this.
Because it had been a decade of me writing this movie off. So even though the ending was lame, the journey was so much better than I expected it to be. Yeah. So no, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I wouldn't recommend it to everybody, but if you love the original, add this to the universe.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if I ever find a physical copy of it somewhere, I'll pick it up. But because I've got the first one on Blu-ray. But okay, well, wrapping up another installment, possibly the dead end to dead end sequels. We'll see where it goes from here, folks. But thanks for joining us. First, some silly movies, but one really solid one. And I've been one of your hosts, Grizzly Abner, and I've been joined by
Professor Wagstaff.
Vinny, nothing personal, Kevin Smith.
Stay scary?